Welcome to a new episode of TTT, Talking Transport Transformation. In this very special episode, we will collaborate with the Women on the Move team as part of their International Women's Day, or better yet, International Women's Month campaign. Together, we will delve into the concept of gender transformative transport and explore how each of us can contribute to building a more inclusive and gender-neutral transport system. Joining my colleague Zuadi from Women on the Move today is Dr. Sheila, a remarkable feminist voice in transport 2023 and a professor at the School of Urban and Regional Planning at the University of the Philippines. Dr. Sheila is also a mentor in the Women on the Move program, supporting young women on their path in the transport sector. Additionally, we will be hearing from Patricia Mariano, who will provide insights into the mentorship program and its impact on empowering women in transportation. Without further ado, let's pass the microphone to the Women on the Move team.
Thank you, Hannah, for joining us today as we celebrate International Women's Month 2024. I'm Zuadi Pinto, and I'm extremely happy to be your host for this interview with Dr. Sheila, delving into her remarkable and inspiring career in the transport sector. Before we begin our conversation with Dr. Sheila, I would like to extend a warm welcome to Patricia, who will tell us a bit more about Women on the Move mentorship program. Welcome, Pat.
Thanks, Zuadi. Women on the Move is this network for transport practitioners or those interested to be in transport in Asia. And this is, we wanted to create the space because we believe that women make up an essential part of the transport sector. So we want to create this open space for women to engage with each other. And it's through enhancing this exchange between female experts in the transport sector that we want to see an increased visibility of the issues that women face in transport. The goal is really to connect women from different backgrounds, different countries, and different, I would say, experience levels in the sector as well.
Thank you, Pat, for sharing. Now, let's turn our attention to our guest. Dr. Sheila, could you please provide us with an overview of your work?
Thank you, Zuadi. Thank you, Pat. First of all, I'd like to thank you for inviting me to this podcast. This is a topic that is very close to my heart, of course, for many reasons, but part of because I'm a woman. But again, when I talk about gender, I simply do not just discuss about women. Okay, just a very short background about myself. I work at the School of Urban and Regional Planning, as Zuadi had mentioned, and I also am part of the Women in Transport Leadership. It's an Asian Australia network where we look at issues on transport, gender issues on transport. I served for a short time at the Department of Transportation. For 3 years, I served as Assistant Secretary. And even at the department, I was working on gender and development. So as you can see, this is really, you know, really part of the work that I do now, gender and accessibility.
Dr. Sheila, to kick off our discussion, could you share your perspective on gender transformative transport?
I'm going to answer that in a roundabout way first, because I just came from Hanoi. That's where I got my cones. It's very cold in Hanoi. But yeah, we had a gender mainstreaming workshop, but gender in the workforce workshop. And part of my presentation there was to actually look at what we call the gender gap, you know, in four levels, in the workplace, in education, in health, and also in political empowerment. But overall, the gender gap is about it's close at 68.6%. This is from the Global Gender Gap Report of 2023. So that means that there's like a more than 30% gap of women. No, women are not completely, mainstreamed in society. Now, the evidence from that particular report was that the evidence suggests that the gap is due both to lack of suitable job opportunities and lack of access to existing opportunities. Due to, and this is important when we want to understand women in transport, due to disproportionate care responsibilities of women. A study, I think, that was conducted showed that women have 61% of their work are unpaid. So this is really because of care, no? Care functions, mobility of care functions. Now, therefore, when you think about it that way, the opportunity costs of poor transport systems and services that are unreliable and inflexible are therefore borne disproportionately by women. I want us to see that when you talk about women, when you talk about gender in transport, this is the situation. So what is gender transformative transport then? It is a paradigm, a planning paradigm, where you look at the system and say, okay, not everyone has same travel needs, men, women, children. Therefore, a gender transformative system should also recognize the travel needs and patterns of women. Unlike men, women have many short trips, you know, many short trips for mobility of care. And so therefore, they travel also most of the time during peak periods. So as far as transport planning is concerned, these are things you must look at, because services, normally when you look at transport planning, you just look at peak hour movements, right? Because that's most critical. But as you can see, if you look at perspective, if you look at the gender, you know, transformative way of looking at it, you also see that women travel during off-peak periods. So it is therefore, so for me, in a roundabout way, my definition of gender transformative transport is really the recognition of that the travel patterns and needs of women and children. And, you know, when I talk about gender, it's really not just about women. It's also the non-binary sector of society. So to also develop a system that would respond to their needs or chance, and also enable women to access, you know, work, to access job opportunities. That's what it means when you talk about, that's what it means to me. I mean, it's simply not, can I ride this well? I mean, if I carry a lot of things, will I be able to get? No, it's more than that. It's enabling, it's empowering women to actually be the best of who she is, considering her many, many responsibilities.
So what would you say are the main challenges that we should take a look at, and how should we face them?
First off, it's culture. Yeah, culture is very important when we try to put in gender transformative transport policies in place. What does that mean? You know, culture has a stereotype, right? Like, oh, women, you only do this. You don't go to work. You know, you just don't. You don't have to get high degrees. That's one, culture and stereotyping. The other one also is a lack of comprehensive understanding of what women needs, you know, as far as transport is concerned. And I think a huge part of the challenge is the collection of appropriate data. So you would know exactly what you're dealing with. And so, if, for instance, you have a new program, but yeah, is it useful? Is it working? If you don't have data, it's not going to be, you know, it's not going to be easy tracking whether what you're doing does respond to the women's needs.
Well, we're talking about like the challenges and how we could face them. I would like to know from your research and also from your experience, how do you approach the task of integrating accessibility and gender issues into transportation planning?
That's a great question, because, and I like that question, because when we talk about gender, we tend to focus on gender only. But you see, in the concept of we integrate this, we had several researches already on what we call passengers with limited mobility. That's how we term them. So passengers with limited mobility could be life stage. Like if I am, you know, if I'm a woman, I carry many things. I have children, small children. So that's life cycle. Or if I'm elderly, I'm already an old person, but, you know, an elderly woman who has difficulty, you know, riding or boarding the gate. So that's a life stage. There's also physical disability, because it's also, it is important, it is imperative to actually link gender and disability. It's called intersectionality, and it's now gaining grounds, right? You look at these different intersections of difficulties, of challenges when you take your transport. So the way we look at it in our research, and we've done one or two papers on it, is we look at them as passengers with limited mobility. And by that, you would be able to just say, okay, what happens if I'm a woman and I have a disability? Is it more difficult than if I'm a man and it's difficult and has a physical disability? Now, towards this end, actually, Swadi, when I was an assistant secretary at the Department of Transportation, we ran an online survey on accessibility. We wanted to find out how accessible our transport systems are in Metro Manila, in the Philippines, actually, including road, rail, air, and water. So, yeah, we integrate gender. I'll go back to the intent of your question. We integrate gender and disability by looking at the concept of passengers with limited mobility. But I'd like to just share that in that research, what came out, because we looked at it also through the journey cycle, like before I get out of the house, what are my challenges? What should I know if I am a person with disability? What do I need? So it actually came out in the research that information is also very important. Like if I'm a person with disability, it's important for me to know when the next available train would be. So information is key. Information when you go to the station, information where to buy the tickets at the station, and then information when you get on the train, when is the, what's the next stop? So in our research, it actually came out that, of course, the physical infrastructure is important, but information is equally important to actually enable persons with disability and, you know, those with intersectional issues to be able to travel more efficiently.
Talking now about the Philippines, are there notable examples from your research or experience that would highlight the success of gender transformative transport initiatives? Or can you tell us a bit about these initiatives that are in the country?
Okay, and I talk about the initiatives. Whether they're successful, I've said that in the beginning, is still something that we need to actually endeavor to measure down the line. It's ongoing. But for me, the first important initiative that was implemented in the Philippines is the establishment of the Philippine Commission on Women, right? This was established through a Republic Act called the Magna Carta of Women. Now, so it looks at the various rights of women, you know, what they should be doing, what you know, their protection and all that. And part of the Magna Carta, part of that act is the allocation, the requirement of agencies, national agencies, local agencies, to allocate 5% of their total budget to gender programs, projects, and activities. So for me, that's very important, because a budget is there. It's really just how do we, you know, use the budget efficiently. So those are two. I'd also like to share, you know, in the course of my research in preparation for that Hanoi Gender Conference, I also saw that in the Philippines, we implemented what we call the She to See program. You know that, you know, we have about 1.2 million of seafarers are from the Philippines, but less than 2% are actually women. So the She to See, it's a mouthful, right? She to See was a program that was implemented by the Women in Maritime Philippines. It was meant to actually encourage women to take leadership, not just become deckhands, but, you know, to take leadership positions, you know, leadership positions in the maritime sector. So this ran from 2013 to 2018. Not very, what do you call this? Not yet very effective, because what they did was they looked at, okay, how many women actually joined it. And of the total, I think there were four women who are now part of the maritime as officials, okay? As officials. Now, in terms of them being in the workforce, the data shows that 90% are in the maritime sector, but they are in services. Of course, we have the allocation of the first car of the MRT, the train we have on EDSA. The first car is for women and for children. So that's another, you know, I think that's a notable implementation. And the ongoing public transport modernization program is also a heed to the call for making transport, the transport system, public transport, more available and more responsive to women. And I guess the fact that we're talking about it right now means that it has gained rounds a bit. You know, this talk about women empowerment, that's a good thing.
Moving to the next question, I would like to ask you, are there global initiatives or models in other countries that can adopt to create gender transformative transport systems?
When I talk about gender transformative transport systems, it's always two, for me, it's always two layers. Women in transportation, using the public transportation, and women in the transport sector. So I'd like to just say, when I was, again, I just said I went to Hanoi during this gender mainstreaming conference, and I was listening to Carolina of Chile. She's actually a colleague of Paula. Paula was one of the 2023 Remarkable Females. I was with her in Berlin. But what they did is they now employ women drivers for the bus systems. It was based on the fact that they don't have enough drivers anymore, so they're now tapping women, and the women are doing quite well. And so they also have, you know, targets like, okay, 13. They ask the concessionaire, the bus concessionaires, this becomes part of the contract with the bus concessionaire. So it's not whimsical. It's contract. It's based on requirements, and then it's supposed to increase. I think right now they're at 13%. It's supposed to increase to 18%. So that is, for me, when I was listening to this, like, wow, that's a great thing. And although, you know, it's a fairly new initiative, and I'd just like to say the Philippines also tried to, you know, I think we tried this many years ago. We also tried to employ women drivers in the, based on the fact that women are careful drivers and all that, but it was not sustained. The thing that I like about Chile's program, Santiago's program, is that they have parameters, they have targets. It's not like, okay, let's employ women and then that's it. No, they have targets. So they say, okay, and it is integrated, it is included in the contract that they have with their bus concessionaires. Again, not whimsical. It is part of a program. And this is women in the workforce. The other one is very, very, it looks like it's a simple initiative, but I think it's a powerful initiative. They've actually transformed their stations, their bus stops, into bus stops that are safe. It's well lit. It has, you know, you can see the, it's not covered. So women are not scared to wait in the bus stops. Because as you may know, and our research also shows that women, girls, and the trans girls, they always experience harassment at the bus stop and inside the bus. So I was really impressed with what they did. And what impressed me most is that they also did a lot of, because I think this is key, they did a lot of participatory planning. So they talked to a lot of women, they talked to the concessionaires, they asked the bus drivers, okay, can you do this? right? So it's not like, okay, you know, 13%. No, they asked. So this is very consultative. What can you do? Like 13%, can that be done? 18%, can that be done? So I think that beyond the program, it was also the process that was, for me, was struck me most.
Next question that we have is also in the field of data management, and it would be about your opinion on how to measure the impact of gender transformative initiatives and what makes them actually successful.
One of which is, you know, when you do transport planning, part of it is looking at travel time of people. But you see, we don't have a disaggregated data on travel time or how long the women waited. So for me, impact would mean collecting data that is disaggregated by gender, looking at, okay, did the women travel faster because we improved our transport sector? Did the women wait less than, you know, shorter time because we actually acknowledge that they have shorter trips? So travel time is important. Another one, of course, is the, you know, if data on harassment, did we reduce, has the data on harassment been reduced? That means that you have been able to, you know, reduce the danger of the transport sector from the women. So that's one, a reduction. Another one is reduction of harassment cases. So for me, that's three things: travel time, reduction of harassment cases, and increase in the participation of women in the workforce. I was talking to somebody who works at the aviation sector in the US, and she said, you know, as far as we're concerned, they collect data all the time, right? But they said, since they started collecting data, maybe a decade ago, they've always had 20% as the total women's participation in the sector. But although it has stayed at 20%, it was what kind of jobs that they were doing that changed. So over time, women were in technical positions. Women were leaders, right? So data is really not just data. It's data that you have to be able to understand.
The next question is something that probably many professionals already ask you working in the field of transport, but it is like, what advice would you give to integrate gender transformative approaches to the work into transportation planning?
That's a really good question, because part of the struggle when you want to have gender transformative transport is to actually get the buy-in of your leaders, right? The leaders who are male. So therefore, sometimes you talk about gender transformative policies and they say, okay, if we have extra money, okay, if, you know, if it allows. But see, the trick there is actually, the strategy there is to consider gender transformative policies as an integral part of efficiency. Efficiency is having the right service at the right time. Right? So that's also a decrease in travel time. So you do not remove gender responsive policies from efficiency. You put them together. You also include gender responsive policies in safety of public transport. It's not a separate issue. It is an issue that touches on safety because everybody wants a safe public transportation. So for me, it's an integration of the gender responsive policies into existing parameters for transport planning, efficiency, right? Safety. And of course, reliability. Reliability meaning that the bus will be there on time when it's supposed to be there. That's actually also part of having gender responsive policies. For me, talking about gender and accessibility is really not just a job for me. It is something that I firmly believe in. Now, it's an advocacy for me. So if I don't take this as a job. I take this as my life's work. Because I've mentioned earlier that my only child is a trans girl. So I want to make sure that the transport system is safe for her to use. So it's an advocacy. It is an advocacy. It's not just, okay, my research topic. And I always say that when you talk about being a leader, it does not necessarily have to be a big thing. It's really just encouraging the women in your space, in your sphere of influence, to be the best of who they can be, and to be safe and to fight for things that would allow them to be safe and to become who they need to be.
In that regard, it would also mean that we as people don't have to see the change to a gender transformative transport, not only from a professional point of view, but also just as a human point of view of our daily lives, we can be leaders.
Definitely. Because we always think, oh, we need to change everything. It doesn't work that way. Anything worthwhile happens for a long time. But what you do is you put the seed, you work, even when it doesn't seem to be doing anything, you work on it, you strive. Because that's where change happens, in the small things.
Is there something else that you would like to share for this podcast, Dr. Sheila, in the topic of gender, and also taking the opportunity of this whole month to just give a focus on gender and talk about this very interesting topic?
I'm always grateful for the opportunity to work with women who are beautiful in their own ways. You know, it's because we have different gifts, we have different talents, and we don't do the same work, but we're all women. And for me, I think I heard this also in one of the training programs. One of the key and outstanding feature of a woman is compassion. So we need to actually capitalize on the compassion of women. While we do the work we need to do to have gender transformative transport. But we have gone so far, we can now ride buses. We can even ride our own bicycles, right? We've come so far, but there's still a lot of things to do. So let's just do it together. Women, unite, remember, be compassionate, but be courageous.
Thank you, Dr. Sheila, for these inspiring words during our conversation. It's always empowering to learn from you. I trust our audience found this interview inspiring as well. Once again, a big thank you to Tumi for providing us with this platform to celebrate this month and talk more about gender in transport.
And that's a wrap for today's enlightening episode of TTT, Talking Transport Transformation. We hope you've gained valuable insights into the importance of gender transformative transport and how it shapes our communities. A heartfelt thank you to our esteemed guests, Dr. Sheila and Patricia Mariano, for sharing their expertise and experience with us. Their dedication to empowering women in the transportation sector is truly inspiring and reminds us of the progress we can achieve through collaboration and inclusivity. We'd also like to extend our gratitude to the Women on the Move team for their partnership in this episode. Their ongoing efforts to advocate for gender equality in transport are making a tangible difference in our world. Remember, the journey towards a more inclusive and gender-neutral transport system doesn't end here. It's a collective endeavor, and each of us has a role to play in driving positive change. Stay tuned for future episodes where we continue to explore transformative ideas in the world of transport. Until next time, keep moving forward and advocating for a brighter, more equitable future for all. Thank you for listening.